This is an interview with a Mr. Paul Kramer for the Youngstown University Oral History Project by David Arms at the Naval Reserve Center, 315 East Laclede, Youngstown, Ohio, February 24th, 1976, at approximately 1:25 in the afternoon. Mr. Kramer starts this interview by just asking you a few questions. First, could you just give me a little bit of your background? Where were you born, brought up, that type of thing?
Born in Youngstown, Ohio, September 30th, 1930. I was educated in the Youngstown City school system. Later on, attended Youngstown State University and Ohio University. I received a bachelor education, BA degree in Youngstown University in 1972. Mm-hmm. After a long period with the United States Marine Corps and Marine Corps Reserve, through strictly the night part-time program.
Uh-huh.
Basically, that's my education. I majored in history. I'm a plumber by trade.
Mm-hmm.
However, changed fields and went into environmental health. Presently with Mahoney County Board of Health.
Uh-huh.
They're environmental health and plumbing coordinator.
I see. But you do have a BA degree in education.
Yes.
Have you ever taught?
No. I teach part-time.
I see.
But I've never taught in the system full-time.
Uh-huh. Where do you teach?
At Shawton Vocational School, and on occasion I'll teach in one of the high schools.
I see. Could you just give me, when did you join the Marine Corps? Give me a little bit of your background in the Marine Corps.
I joined the Marine Corps in 1949, April of 1949. I went in a one-year program. It was called USMCV.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the V stands for, to this day, though.
Yeah.
I got out in April of 1950 and got recalled in July of 1950.
Uh-huh.
I was then assigned to 1st Marine Division. I was in Korea. I was there for approximately 14 months. Come back into the 2nd Marine Division.
Uh-huh.
And then I was separated. At that time, I joined the Marine Corps Reserve. I got out in April again of 1952, joined the Marine Corps Reserve in April of 52, or in June of 52.
Uh-huh.
I then went back into Marine Corps for 2 years in 1954, 5, and 6,
uh-huh,
on I&I duty in Steubenville.
Uh-huh.
I get out again in the Marine Corps Reserve, and I've been in the Marine Corps Reserve ever since.
Okay. What are some of the places you served at when you were on active duty in the Marine Corps?
Well, I've been several places. I've been out at Quantico, was Parris Island. Basically, we all started at Parris Island, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
From Parris Island, I went to Quantico, Quantico to Camp Lejeune, Camp Lejeune to Camp Pendleton, Camp Pendleton. I've been in Okinawa, I've been on Guam. Of course, I was with the 1st Marine Division, and we were in numerous places.
So active duty time, about how much have you had?
I've got 4 years and 8 months.
4 years and 8 months. Now, you said you're in Korea. Did you see any combat action in Korea?
12 months.
What kind of action were you involved in?
Well, my job was actually a squad leader of a 3.5 rocket squad.
Uh-huh.
Attached to an infantry company.
Mm-hmm. During this period of time, you did engage the enemy in active combat, didn't it?
Yes.
What are your feelings, what were your feelings? Did you ever think that you might get left over there or anything like that? Or?
No, I had no hostile feelings at all. I felt at that time we had a job to do and we did it.
I see. Were you ever scared at any time over there?
Well, yeah, I think that's normal reaction.
I see.
And I just didn't go with the reluctance that I was going to get killed. I went with the knowledge that I was going to come back and survive.
I see. Now, could you just give me an example of some of your active battles over there? Were you any of the big ones? Or?
Well, it depends. Now, you know, when you're in a combat situation, they never classify a battle.
Uh-huh.
Until the battle's usually over. And then they award a campaign star for the battle. If you were in the battle or in the area at the time of the battle, you were considered to have contributed towards the battle.
Uh-huh.
I have 5 campaign stars,
uh-huh,
to attribute to the fact that out of the 7 major campaigns, I made 5 of them.
I see.
I did not actually participate,
uh-huh,
in only 3 of them.
Uh-huh.
And they designated those at that time as a specific name.
I see.
A hill would be Pork Chop Hill or something like
that. Yeah.
That was a major battle.
Uh-huh.
And I was on that particular hill at that particular time.
I see.
Now, two of the other battles, I was not. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
We were a force in reserve, not engaged in that particular phase of the action in Korea.
I see.
But I was nevertheless there in the immediate vicinity, and Headquarters Marine Corps says you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And you therefore rate to wear the star in your campaign ribbon.
I see. Now you said you were a sergeant in charge of a...
3.5 rocket squad. No, yeah. I was at that particular time, I was a corporal.
Corporal.
In charge of a 3.5 rocket squad.
During the time we were there, did any of the personnel assigned under your responsibility, did they get wounded or killed or any of this type of thing?
No, I had two get wounded.
Two get wounded. But nobody actually...
Nobody was killed.
From your personal experience, would you judge that as a rough camp or a rough time in your career or Marine Corps, or was it...
No, I don't think it was a rough time in a career. I think that the orientation program we had prior to going there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I was caught when the Marine Corps was at a low point in its history. I think at that time we had 75,000 people.
Uh-huh.
To form a division was an impossibility. They actually sent a brigade to Korea.
Uh-huh.
To form the division. Well, I was part of the forming, and of course we had no indoctrination
mm-hmm.
other than issuing of gear and moving.
I see.
It was hard to adapt to the climate.
Uh-huh.
Their winters are severe. A lot more severe than they are here in Youngstown. However, mm-hmm. their climate is, it can get a lot colder. You can withstand
mm-hmm.
that particular climate more than you can this, even mm-hmm. though you're outside.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was, I'd been trained for just the very thing I was sent for previous mm-hmm. to that. But the only thing we fought actually was the climate.
Mm-hmm.
But I got there in October when the climate was similar to what we have in Youngstown. Of course, as the months progressed, so did the climate.
Uh-huh.
But no, it was nothing we couldn't withstand.
I see. Now, when you returned, you got out of the Marine Corps and into the Marine Corps Reserve.
That's right.
What kind of a job did you do then? What kind of a job did you have at that time?
I was a plumber's apprentice.
I see.
At that particular time.
And, go ahead.
Still attending Youngstown University part-time.
I see.
At night.
Where did you drill?
I drilled right here, 315 East Laclede.
I see, back in 1952.
Two.
I see. Well, that's interesting. And then you say you went back on active duty. How did you get back in this I&I stuff?
Well, this in 1954, it was a period, again, that we're in the same process. I think history sort of repeats itself. We're in a similar situation today.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployment was bad.
Mm-hmm.
No jobs available. I applied for active duty.
I see.
On an I&I staff.
Uh-huh.
And I was selected to go there, and I did.
I see. Okay. I'll just check. That thing runs kind of funny sometimes if I look at it. So you were unemployed at that time, and that's why you...
That's why I went back into Marine Corps.
I see. And you were assigned to Steubenville, Ohio, is that it?
Steubenville, Ohio.
Could you just give me a brief description of what some of your duties were on the I&I staff?
Well, I went to Steubenville as a supply clerk.
Mm-hmm.
I was then... Of course, in the realm, I was promoted,
uh-huh.
and the supply chief left, and I took over his duties.
I see.
So basically, I had functioned as a supply chief.
Uh-huh.
Now, I picked the MOS up coming out of Korea and being retrained at Camp Lejeune
uh-huh.
in the warehouse down there.
Uh-huh.
And I trained in supply. I had a supply MOS. I committed the company in the reserve company as a supply man, picked up some training here.
Mm-hmm.
Then the 2 years and went down there as a supply clerk. And of course, I was promoted in that time period. I became the supply chief of it was at that time it was the 76th Special Infantry Company.
I see. Now, when you went down when you were retraining for this new MOS, how did you do this? In other words, how did
through a formal school?
Was it a formal school?
Yes, I went to a formal school at Camp Gagger for 3 months.
I see. What type of responsibilities do you have as a supply chief first?
Well, I would think it would be the same as today. I had the full responsibilities is from minimum to 782 gear, which is just issuing of, plus clothing, mm-hmm. plus the entire fiscal.
I see.
Which covers building grounds, contracts for food, contracts for utilities, and the whole ball of wax. Your different codes that your money's allocated
uh-huh.
to operate the training center. Well, I was thoroughly familiar with all that, and uh-huh. that was my function.
Where did you you report, who was your boss at the time?
It was a captain by the name of Musgrove.
I see. The active duty officer?
The active duty officer.
So you worked for him directly?
I worked for him directly.
I see. Now, what were your responsibilities in regards to the reserve program at the time as an I&I member?
Well, it's the same as it is today. The I&I is inspector, instructor.
I realize that I personally might know of this, but the only reason is the people that listen to this tape might not.
Basically, all it is to assist the reserve component in any way you can.
I see.
Through your knowledge in the particular field that you deal with.
I see.
Mine was supply. Mine actually was to support the reserve unit with anything that they might deem necessary.
I see. Now, when you were down at Steubenville, this is the time of, I'd like to try to find some information out about. You were assigned down there. How many I&I staff members were there?
There were seven.
Uh-huh.
Seven I&I members at that time.
That included the officer?
That included the officer.
I see. And where was the reserve center?
It was on Cherry and Pico Street in Steubenville.
In Steubenville. Were there other centers, let's say, in East Liverpool and other places?
There were. There was an Army unit. However, this center was a joint, Navy Marine Corps Reserve Training Center.
I see, in Steubenville.
In Steubenville.
Uh-huh.
But there were other centers. The Army, the National Guard, uh-huh, also had units down there.
I see. Where was the closest other Marine Corps Reserve?
Would be Youngstown, Ohio.
Would be Youngstown, and then Pittsburgh?
No, then Wheeling.
Then Wheeling.
Wheeling, West Virginia. Then Pittsburgh. They all fall within the Tri-County area.
I see. Now, most of these are closed, is that it?
Steubenville unit is closed, then moved to Wheeling.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Youngstown unit is closed, moved to Newcastle and Akron.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, all the others are still intact.
I see. What were some of your extra duties that you had on the I&I staff? Did you have any community functions?
Oh, yeah, always community functions. Anything that the community and the CO deemed important, we attended. Prayer, parades, ceremonies, civic organizations requesting military assistance. Any ramification of anything that was justifiable.
I see.
From at that time, Marine Corps had a big recruiting program going with prior Marines or ex-Marines, and we had to make a personal contact at that time. It involved a lot of time with seven people.
Oh, I can imagine. So you were directly involved in recruiting?
Oh, yes. That was the secondary.
That was the secondary.
And your primary was done while you went out into your...
I see. So all seven of you, per se, went out and recruited
the night. We had to spend at least one day and a week in the field.
I see. Now, was it difficult to get recruits at that time?
No. Matter of fact, I went down there in 1954, and that company consisted of 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
I left there 2 years later, and we had 136 people. We jumped the company up on our recruiting program from 30 to 96 in, I think, a three-month period. All prior.
All prior service.
Right.
Very interesting. Why do you think the Marine Corps was so hot on this recruiting drive of prior people at that time?
Well, I think they were in the process of reorganizing and rebuilding their reserve structure.
I see.
Because if you had been in a reserve at the time in 1950 and had an obligation, it wasn't a six-year obligation, it was probably a prior Marine with a two- or three-year obligation to the reserve program, and in 1954 his obligation had been up. So we were in the process of reorganizing and trying to rebuild the structure. And it was successful, it was highly successful.
Since then, has the Marine Corps kept this level, or has it dipped again, or...?
No, I can only talk from the unit that I'm in.
Yeah.
No, we're tapered off. We've tapered off.
I see.
We're naturally now in a manpower bind because of the six-month, six-year people. The company I'm in at present is in the process of dropping, I think, 50 people this year because of the recruiting effort 6 years ago.
I see.
So it makes it difficult. We've maintained or retained probably six people out of the 50. We've since, within the past 2 months, recruited an additional 10. So it hasn't even kind of balanced at 50-50 yet.
I see.
But I think we'll obtain the goal. I really do. I don't think we'll taper off to actually zero.
What would you say the relationship, having been on both sides of the fence, the I&I staff with the reserve unit, what What is the INI responsible for, and what's the reserve unit responsible for?
Well,
how do they work together, in other words?
Yeah, they work together. It depends. The two COs, the INI CO and the commanding officer,
yeah,
have to work together. The nucleus has to be there, or there's nothing.
Yeah.
There is no intermediate goals that you can achieve. If one force works against the other, you've obtained absolutely nothing.
Uh-huh.
And I've been fortunate because I've never seen this.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen animosity in the lower ranks, but I've never seen two COs that, at least outward,
mm-hmm,
characteristics would show that the two did not like each other.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where it lies. Now, we might not agree with the INI's decision,
mm-hmm,
and of course we'll fight it, and the ultimate goal is that the commanding officer of the reserve unit is the commanding officer.
I see.
And supposedly his decision supersedes.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it get to the point where the two individuals would argue between themselves and say, well, you know, it's my decision and this is it.
Uh-huh.
It's usually been a compromise.
I see.
It's worked out well.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that the reserve officer, commanding officer, is the overall responsible for the whole operation?
That's right. I don't mean that as far as a fiscal.
I see.
I'm saying that when you get into a fiscal budget and things like that, the INI is responsible.
I see.
His people have the input.
Uh-huh.
The input, though, is coordinated between the reserve and the regular.
Uh-huh.
What are your demands and what are my demands, all right? If your demands are $500 and my demand are $500, then our common goal is $1,000, monetary-wise.
Okay. I'm saying what happens if you only get $750, who gets cut?
Which happens. We try to then place priorities where we see them as justifiable means of a solution.
No, but in the training and operations of the unit, the reserve commanding officer is the commanding officer.
Commanding officer.
I see. That's much different than other operations work, that's why. Now, in your training functions and everything, how do you plan for these? In other words, who is responsible to see the training takes place? And I'm trying to get around to is, when it comes time to do your two-week training type period, which all reserve units are a common thing there, who plans this, who coordinates it, who decides where you're going and what's happening?
Well, 4th Marine Division.
I see, and that's where?
Decides where we're going. That's out of Camp Pendleton.
Uh-huh.
They decide, they have a 5-year syllabus.
Uh-huh.
And you know for the next 5 years exactly where you're supposed to attend ATD.
Mm-hmm.
How they coordinate it, they have a pre-ATD conference,
mm-hmm,
that's attended by the CO, and in our particular case, the host unit, and they inform us then what we're going to do, what we're going to need. The only thing they want to know from us is how many people you're going to bring out.
Mm-hmm.
They make available to us any special requests we have,
mm-hmm,
helicopter lifts, demonstrations with any special vehicle that they might have that just come out recently. Anything that we might want to coordinate is coordinated at that conference. It's then followed up, usually I would say at the most, by 2 phone calls a month.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm extending that a lot, maybe it's 1.
Uh-huh.
But there is a lot of communication. Until we get down to about the last 30 days, then it's probably based on a weekly call.
Mm-hmm.
They're calling us, telling us that what we've asked for has been program. We request ammunition for a special night firing with, mm-hmm, the 50s or whatever.
So basically your own company makes out its own training program.
We're responsible. When we get on the pre-IATD conference, we take down a company training schedule.
I see.
Now, we've been fed information,
mm-hmm,
before we make up the training schedule to know what's available,
uh-huh,
and know what we can request.
I see.
I've never gone, really, in the past, and I've been in Newcastle 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never gone to summer camp with a training schedule that the host unit didn't supply everything we've asked for. It might not coordinate with the times that we've asked for,
uh-huh,
but it's been done.
And as to, you mentioned that you belong to a service company over here, which is attached to a battalion, is that it?
Yes.
Okay, now where is the battalion headquarters?
The battalion's down in Albany, Georgia.
I see. Now, what is your responsibility to the battalion?
Well, support. A service company,
yeah,
has a dispersing section,
uh-huh,
supply section, mess section, motor T section,
mm-hmm,
we're going to pick up a postal session and a PX session. It's basically support for the division. There's only one service company within a division.
Which is part of, but how many battalions to the division?
Well, there's three battalions to a division.
Okay.
But there's not three service battalions to a division.
Right, there's only one service.
Only one service company.
To one battalion.
Attached to a service battalion.
Right. What are the other companies attached to this battalion? What do they do?
Well, their functions, there's a big area breakdown within service. Supply, they have a complete supply battalion because a division can't move without supplies. One company can't possibly function with 10 categories and then with the primary function being supply, so they have a supply battalion. Then they break the other nucleus down into the other priorities, water team. Well, supply and mess. There are other nucleuses, dispersing, which is a big area. You know, you can feed them and pay them and they're happy.
That's right.
You take those two benefits away and you've got nothing but discontent.
I see.
So the other, the third company would again support the nucleus of our company.
Okay, now, basically what we're talking about is the same type of organization that's existed in Youngstown and in Steubenville when they were activated, however they've been activated now. The same type of function. In other words, you had an engineering company here, which was part of it, something, and down in Steubenville you had a rifle company, and now over there you have a service company, which is basically they might provide a different function, but the organization is the same. That's what I'm trying to establish. Now, this battalion down in Albany, Georgia, that's the battalion headquarters is there, or is the rest of the battalion there, or what?
Well, it's the battalion headquarters. The headquarters is only made up of a nucleus of a small amount of people.
I see.
That are full-time,
uh-huh.
that look over the responsibility.
I see.
And we are just a reporting agent to them. The decision agency is out of the 4th Marine Division.
I see. Out of Camp Pendleton.
Out of Camp Pendleton.
The Marine Corps seems to have a different chain of command type series than like the Navy Reserve and the Air Force Reserve, and that's what I'm trying to clearly establish. You just mentioned when you go on your two-week ATD or your additional training period, you request and you get information from directly from division. Battalion plays no part in this, or
no. Battalion's there at the pre-ATD. Battalion feeds you some information.
I see.
They feed it to division.
I see.
Division feeds it to us.
I see. I see. So really, they aren't. You correspond directly with division. And battalion is kind of off to one side, is that it?
No, we go through the chain of command. And really, there's another step in our chain.
I see.
And that's the district headquarters. All our communications go three places. They go to district, battalion, division. However, if there's a decision to be made, it's from division.
That's right.
We go through district as a courtesy. District makes a recommendation, I'm sure, to division, but division makes the ultimate decision.
I see. And so now what does this district people do? How do they fit into the picture?
Well, they have an administrative section that works directly with the INI staff. Basically, they're an overseer for the INI staff.
I see.
Is all it basically is. Now, the Marine Corps is in the process of eliminating all district headquarters.
I see.
And making division solely responsible.
I see. Some kind of an administrative section for the active duty INI staff.
That's all it is.
I see. I see. Now, the battalion, in case of mobilization, without divulging any classified information or anything like that, would you report to battalion then? Is that it? Or
no, I think the possibility of mobilization is the company goes to Camp Pendleton, which would be division headquarters.
I see. And then battalion might be someplace else?
No, battalion I'm sure would be there also.
I see. Okay.
In other words, all the nucleus is all pulled to one central location.
Okay. All right. Now, as a service company to the battalion and everything, do you ever go on training with battalion or at all?
No.
Or they go separately?
They go separately.
Where would somebody, would they go up to Camp Pendleton for training? Is that
it? Yeah, well, within the nucleus of our company. In other words, I've got a photo section and I'm sending people to various bases throughout the United States, starting next month.
I see.
All right, battalion gives us 3 commitments. They might have 9.
Uh-huh.
They might send part of the other part of the other company in battalion to fulfill 3 other commitments.
Uh-huh.
They can't incorporate in a regular establishment, you know, 40 people, 40 dispersing clerks at one time.
Mm-hmm.
They have to split it up and divide it. Same with photo commitments. They have an exercise. They don't need 22 photo people
mm-hmm.
to cover one exercise. They do need 2 or 3.
Okay.
So they give us a commitment or 2 or 3 commitments, and we cover that.
Mm-hmm.
Other aspects, other companies pick up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's evenly distributed. So you don't have 40 or 50 brand new people walking in on you and say, well, here we are.
Uh-huh.
Where do you want us to go to work? It just can't be done.
I see.
So they divide it, subdivide it into...
This is how you mainly handle the people who can't make it during the 2 weeks that you're scheduled to go. Is that it, or?
Yeah, it's not how we handle it, but it's a darn good alternate.
I see. Well, how do you handle somebody? Let me ask you that.
Well,
they can't go. Let's say you have it scheduled for the motor transportation to go down to.
We're going to Bridgeport.
To Bridgeport,
California.
California. If you have them scheduled to go to Bridgeport in July. What happens if Joe Schmo works for the city and the city says, hey, I can't possibly let this guy go into this month. We've got the 4th of July parade and all this other stuff. How do you handle this fellow?
Well, by law, and I think the law was passed by an act in 1968,
uh-huh.
the employer has to give the employee
2 weeks a year.
2 weeks a year. And it doesn't specifically state what 2 weeks.
No.
In the SOP, there is a criteria where the commanding officer has some leeway. And of course, work is not one of them.
Uh-huh.
But if he should be a graduate from a learned institution,
uh-huh.
Or taking a bar examination, something that he can actually substantiate that would create a hardship for the individual. The bar exam, for instance, is given once a year.
Yeah.
Miss it, and you wait for a year. So you actually unemploy that lawyer for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
He has the ramification, the CO does, to make the justification and excuse the man. But the only person that has it is the commanding officer. I don't.
Of the company.
Of the company.
I see. Now, what happens to this man if he's excused?
He has an opportunity, if the opportunity is available to us,
mm-hmm.
to attend at a later date. Like I say, this is why these other increments have proven real valuable to me, because I can say he can't go in July. I've got 3 commitments in March.
Mm-hmm.
Or he might be in school in March. He can't go in March either.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've got commitments in August.
I see. Uh-huh.
If I can fit him in August, if I can't, then I'll apply for a home training center for 2 weeks. If that's impossible, then the CO legitimately can't excuse the man.
Give him a waiver.
It's over.
I see. In your participation and coming up through the ranks and everything, have you found that the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve is a close-knit unit? In other words, once a Marine, always a Marine, semper fidelis and all that?
Yeah, I really think so.
Even in the Reserve?
Well, yeah, there's always the resentment, and I can see it from both sides by being on both sides.
Yeah.
There's always the resentment that the regular Marine has towards a reserve Marine.
Yeah.
Whether it's jealousy or whatever it is, but, you know, 2 days a month and you're in and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
In the earlier cases, it was 3 hours and 2 hours a night,
uh-huh.
a week and you were out. There's always a little animosity and I think a little jealousy that plays a part.
Do you think this affects maybe your training duties or anything like that?
No, not unless it I think indirectly it affects the company, and then directly it affects the company. If the animosity is so great between individuals, whether he be regular or I&I, the I&I counterpart can completely tear down the structure of the company, the reserve company.
Hmm. Now, do you participate with any of the other reservists in any social functions? I mean, are you friendly with them on a regular social level, or strictly in the Marine area?
No, I don't really think so. I don't think that I have any, I've got a lot of close friends that I go to functions with them, but it seems to be all military.
Nice.
We have Marine Corps Ball,
mm-hmm.
It's annual. I belong to Marine Corps League.
Uh-huh.
Over, it's in Akron.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually participate with anybody that's within the company, no, I don't.
You see them during Marine functions.
Well, I'll see a man on the street or something like that, but actually to participate with him someplace other than the Marine Corps, I don't.
Do you find that the Marine Corps is a separate part of your life, or does it?
Oh yeah, it's a separate part of my life.
It doesn't, in other words, you aren't a Marine every day of the week, a little bit here, a little bit there?
Oh yeah, oh no, I don't mean that way. I mean a separate part, I classify it as a job because it's a job to me, it's a second job.
Yeah.
I spend probably on an average monthly basis, I probably spend an additional 20 hours in that training center.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you spend that much time, plus your 2 days, it becomes a job. It's not just a, to me it's a job. It's not just a career, but I find it due to necessity.
I see.
I can't stay away and come in 2 days and find out what's happened in the month.
Uh-huh.
And be abreast of things. It's an impossibility.
I see. So really, it plays almost an everyday.
Everyday occurrence.
Occurrence in your life.
Well, there's distinguishing features, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, the first thing, is haircut.
Mm-hmm.
If they look at your hair, they know you're in something.
Yeah.
And I have the same feeling towards individuals who walk into the office.
Uh-huh.
If I see a guy that walks in with short hair, I know he's in some type of a military unit.
Uh-huh.
And usually, 99% of the time, I'm right. Uh-huh. But, they associate. People associate. They identify.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, I see you,
Gunny
Wolf Committee had a belt buckle on. I'm wearing a watch band.
Yeah.
And you don't have to show it to anybody. All you have to do is sign something or put your hand on the counter and somebody will notice it.
Yeah.
So you identify through objects.
So in other words, you classify your participation in the Marine Corps Reserve more than just a job. It's an extension of your life type of thing. Does your family consider this the same way, or?
Oh yeah, because I've got a son that's in the company also.
Oh, I see.
I've got a son that's a sergeant in the photo section.
Uh-huh.
He's been in the company 5 years.
Uh-huh.
I've got another son that's a senior in Wilson High School.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking military, he's talking Navy.
Well, I can't hold that against him.
No, he belonged to the Sea Cadet out there.
I see, okay.
A long period of time.
Uh-huh.
He's not military orientated because of an indoctrination by me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't really care. I don't want to make a decision for him that he's going to regret.
Mm-hmm.
I don't talk Marine Corps to him. I didn't talk Marine Corps to either one of them.
Okay.
They know what's there because I'm affiliated.
Do you think that the majority, let's say, of the old timers, as the quotation goes, are stereotyped Marine? Or each one approaches it with his own? Is this a section of the population of the United States might be? Could you classify them in a right winger, left winger, that type of area? Or?
Yeah, in today's current market, I think you can. I really do.
You say they all leaned with the same way, or?
Yeah, one strong category or the other. Yeah, I definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can persuade and you can talk and you can demand, but you still can't fight the attitude because it's going to show up, maybe not when you're talking to him, but when he's out by himself.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't change.
Do you think this individual is a dying breed, or do you think there's a new generation coming along?
No, I think there's a new generation. I like to think of it. I know in my feelings, now, this is you and I talking.
Uh-huh.
And in my personal opinion, the entire country's anti-military.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know whether it's due to the fact that the young people created groups, a hippie group, which is come and gone almost mm-hmm. to an extent. I classify the long hair group and the hair's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they get the publicity, and of course publicity is when the deserters leave the services and go to Canada and go to foreign countries. Whether this has an influence on them or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trend, but I think it'll change again. It was the same trend in 1952. or I think 1953, hostility ceased in Korea.
Yeah. And you say history is repeating itself.
Yeah, I think so. I hope, I like to think so. Okay. I think that really, if it got down, and I hope, that if it got down to the nitty-gritty, where this country had to really put themselves online, I think they'd come around. I think the individuality
mm-hmm.
would cease, and they'd surely have enough sense to find out, hey, we've got our backs up against the wall, and we've either got to do one or two things.
Mm-hmm.
We've either got to sit down and fight, or we've just got to get the hell out of here, period. I really like the feel that this country would do that.
Why do you think that the majority of the people, I'm not saying just the old-timer type thing, but the why does a Marine reservist go to drill? Is it for the money, patriotism? Why do you think he goes?
Well, we're in the same period again where basically my Marines, the bulk of them, joined for the 6 months program to beat the draft.
Uh-huh.
It's a known fact. Ask them.
Yeah.
Most of them are educated.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, I had 95% of the company with a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very definitely, you're not going to offer this individual a monetary thing.
Yeah.
All right, since then, things have changed. You can't get because there's no draft.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he doesn't face a threat at going into the service period.
Mm-hmm.
So he stays away. All right, then you entice the individual who comes out of high school. You entice him with money now because he can't get a job.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got something to offer him, $40 a month. Join the program early, get a little seniority, make you a PFC. You come back a Lance Corporal if you're lucky. Now you'll be making $60 a month. So I think it's strictly monetary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also rubbed off with some of the people that have been there 4 and 5 years that originally came into the program to beat the draft. Because they find themselves unemployed and they find out that this is not a necessity. The monetary contribution that they make,
mm-hmm.
that they receive, is it's not a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told this many times. People that work for General Motors goes down. And they're in process right now of going down.
Mm-hmm.
And eliminating 1,500 jobs, I think, if the paper's correct.
So you basically see this, I don't know how to phrase it. You see this as a gain for the Marine Corps, or let's say the reserve services, or do you see this as a time when we're picking up the dregs of society, so to speak?
No, because the Marine Corps set new standards.
Uh-huh.
If you're not within the standards, you don't get in. At one time, you know, I'm sure you know that recruiting was really downright didn't exist. It didn't exist in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
It existed with low mentality type people.
Uh-huh.
That's the person that doesn't attend the drills, doesn't really care whether he has the money or not because he's going to spend it in the night once he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So to him it's nothing. So he really doesn't need it then because it's a matter of how many hours am I going to have it in my pocket? Well, you can't reason, you can't convince, and you can't do anything with this type of individual. Now we set a new set of standards. Picking up people that have high school education, and you can reason with them. Of course, there's always a threat. I'm going to send you on active duty.
Do you have an attendance problem or in the Marine Corps Reserve, especially with a mandatory driller or an obligor?
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, sure, without a doubt. I've had an attendance problem all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
We process people for 18 months. We discharge people with undesirable discharges. But fortunately, it's a very small percentage. Would probably be about 1/16.
Uh-huh. So how would you judge the overall effectiveness of the Marine Corps Reserve from your basic knowledge today? Do you think is it providing a viable second line of defense? Is it ready to be mobilized?
Well, I don't know combat-wise,
mm-hmm.
because service company is not a combat company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can only go from experiences in the jobs that we're trained to do and in the indoctrination of 2 weeks. Actually, our function is to go in for 2 weeks, relieve or do the same job as your counterpart.
Uh-huh.
And we've done it. We've received letters from every shop that we've ever worked in, uh-huh. in Camp Lejeune, on the outstanding. Of course, you know, you're talking about these college people and people with accounting degrees. that to go into a dispersing office and figure a payroll up is nothing, really. Mm-hmm. So we function well, but we're in a period, and I'm sincere, we're in a period now where these people are leaving and we're starting to restructure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think they'll do the job. They've always done the job. Mm-hmm. I've always been proud to be affiliated with that particular company. We create a little animosity again because we do the job too well in some cases. We get on to work for 8 hours. Knock off on Wednesday afternoon the normal TFT course and things like that that the regular Marine runs. We work straight through.
My last question would be to you. Do you think it's all really needed? Do you think we need a reserve strength of what we have today?
Oh, very definitely. I really do. I think with the allowances and allocations that are taken away from the regular establishments, you're going to need something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think history shows that at any time that this country's been in a major conflict, with the exception of the Vietnamese War,
mm-hmm.
that the divisions in the Marine Corps have been supported in most cases with at least 50%, and in the Second World, or not in the Second World War, but in the Korean War, 75% of the division was comprised of reserves. Now, if allocations are being cut down, you can't incorporate and entice new people because of funds, and we break out into something, what the heck are we going to do? Where's your second line of defense? Does it exist or doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're cutting down your first line, somebody better start to think about building the second line.
Is there anything I've neglected to bring up that you think ought to be added to this discussion?
No.
Anything you want to add personal? I guess most
of it. Most of it is. These are my personal feelings.
Yeah.
But I think there's a strong need, and I think it's going to really, I really feel, like I said, who am I? I'm an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I have certain rights. I have a voice in which I can voice objection.
Mm-hmm.
I see, and this is, like I say, my own personal opinion. I see a lot of undertone in this country. I think that if you're and I say it again, if your regular establishments can't put down an undertone, and who's going to come into Youngstown or Newcastle
mm-hmm.
or Pittsburgh on a minute's notice
mm-hmm.
to quell a major disturbance other than your reserve components, whether
yeah.
it be Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, or who, or mm-hmm. National Guard? All of us are going to have to group together.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, one individual can tie up hundreds.
Yeah.
And it takes somebody to get out to unquell a disturbance before things start to move again.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Kramer, and that's it.